Ma. So we are on the second series, part 1, chapter 7. And it's titled as the Supreme Word of the Gita, the Supreme Word. Paramam Vachah, as Sri Krishna puts it, the Supreme Word of the Gita. And with this we enter into chapter 10, which is the Vibhuti Yoga. So as this will continue for few chapters, as we know the scheme is. So why the Vibhuti Yoga? If you see that the whole thing is building up slowly. For what? Not to give us jnana, that's one part. But for the grand revelation of the divine. That is the beauty of the Gita. It is building up slowly, slowly, step by step. To reveal who is this divine, what is this, who is this figure standing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So that's how the whole thing is building up. I'll just give the page. The page is 337. Yes. So it is building up toward that grand revelation, and the previous chapter we have seen that slowly the Gita is showing us the way of bhakti, that you know, bhakti is contains the secret of the yoga. And why bhakti? Again, because the divine is not just an immutable, impersonal, as you know, the some of the Upanishads would claim that he is the Brahman beyond, has no connection with the world, has nothing to do with the world. It is there. And the world is nature or maya or call it whatever, it is unfolding in itself. Now this kind of a philosophical approach, it in a way is comfortable. And it is comfortable because it saves us the effort of trying to reconcile the world and God. So it is very convenient to say that the world is nature, it will going on in its own way. You may put into it the mechanism of karma if you like, don't put it if you like. And there is the divine who is not connected with the world. So it's very convenient because then you don't have to reconcile anything. The problem is that by not trying to reconcile, the problem doesn't get solved. You may call it illusion, but still the question will be where from this illusion has come. And most important, which for me was a very important question, is that where does love originate? If there is only an impersonal some state of static peace. So what is the origin of love? Where does it come from? It's too strong a feeling, we may say, to be denied completely. So where does it, is it all illusion? Because that's how later on in Savitri Death says that it is an illusion because it's binding you to things. But when we read the Gita, then we discover that, well, the origin of love and the whole of human personality engaging with the divine is because the divine himself is all love, all bliss. And there is a very beautiful line here which describes what is bhakti. So what is bhakti? Sri Krishna describes in this chapter. He says that I too take delight in the bhakta, because he starts by saying, Arjun, I am going to reveal to you my supreme watcher. My paramam vacha. He says, I am going to tell you. So the question is, why he is telling Arjun? Why he is not telling others? So Sri Krishna says, because for you have love for me. How? He says, you take joy in me. So bhakti comes from the root bhaj. And bhaj is to take delight in the divine. To take joy in God for the sake of joy. Not because he will give me this, he will give me that. Even if he takes away everything. Just the sheer joy that you are there. All the rest is unimportant. So he says, because you take joy in me, therefore I am going to reveal to you the paramam vacha. So this is how it starts. And what is that supreme word? That supreme word answers one of the questions which is there in the Rig Veda. In 10th mandal of the Rig Veda, you have a very significant phrase. Kasmaye Devaye Havisha Videham. So the rishis are constantly asking, raising this question. To which god should we offer us sacrifices? So they ask Agni. Agni is the leader. Vayu, without Vayu, Agni itself won't burn. You see the paradox. So they are debating which god, Kasmay Devaye Havisa Videham, and they go on to, they ultimately declare, I mean, through different points of view, Hiranyagarbha. So there is a sukta in the Rig Veda, Hiranyagarbha sukta. So that is the golden womb of all things. He says that god from which all has emerged, and that god whom all worship, even the gods are worshipping him. So that's how they say that this is the god to whom we must give our offering, and not to any partial god, one-sided aspect, which is what we have heard, read so far, the Gita itself is saying. The third aspect is that this title is Vibhuti Yoga. Vibhuti is not in the sense that he is a Vibhuti or she is a Vibhuti, that's one meaning, but it's about the glories of God. So in the human sense, it applies, some people manifest that glory, reflect that glory. But Vibhuti implies the glories of God. So this is very interesting, because in chapter 11 of the Gita, we are going to have the disclosure of Kalosmi time. Who is this Vishwarup Darshan? So before you go there, you have to go through the ministers. You see, before you meet the prime minister, you will meet all the big people who will suddenly take you in. Then you will meet probably some other minister, PMO, personal. Then you will meet the prime minister. You are not going to go walk and suddenly in the garden he will say, hi, how are you? So before we reach that grand disclosure, we have to meet the Lord. We have to meet the various overlords before we meet the Lord himself. So the Gita describes in the Vibhuti Yoga the various manifestations of his glory. So he says, I am the one who is become the Manu, the Manu Chatvara, the fourfold, which we know came later on. The seven sages whom the gods consult, they are the mind, from the mind of God, these seven sages are born. And these sages represents God's all-comprehending wisdom. So it goes, as the story goes, he consults all the seven sages. So their names, Atri, Kashyap, Vishwamitra, Vasishtha. So there are some seven sages, or Angiras seers, different terminologies, Marich. So they are the ones who are born from the mind of God. They are his Manasputra. And they help in the governing of the cosmos. So you see, even the stars are named after these various sages. And some of them, even the Gotras are coming from these seers. So each of these seers represents an aspect of the divine wisdom. See, Krishna says, I am the one who has become all this. Then he says that I am the one who is the Manu. So Manu is for each Manavantara. Manavantara is a cycle. Cycle within a cycle. So time frame. So each cycle of a 14 cycle of 14 cycles is governed by Manu. So Manu is again born from the mind, Manas, that's how man, and it is the stress in human consciousness which each Manu determines. So for example, this is the seventh Manuantar. So the Manu who is governing this is Vivaswat Manu, and he is Shraddhade. So this is how it goes. And after this Manvantar, all the Manus suddenly change track. So even if you read, Mother speaks of the seventh cycle, after which there will be no dissolution. And actually you can see the Manus, the nature of the Manus changes entirely. So all this is there, like before this is Chakshusha Manu. So that's when you have the story of the great deluge. So you have the different Manus. So he says, I am the Manus. I am the seven sages. I am the gods, all these gods to whom you give oblation. I am the eternal womb of all things. Etada yonihi. So the same Hiranyagarbha Sukta, but now given in a more personalized form. He says that though I am the unborn, yet I take birth. So that's why the mystery of avatar is gives us the secret of creation actually. Because see, there is a gap between the creator and the creation. How? Creator is ever in his inalienable calm. And creation is always movement. And wherever there is movement, there is shobh, there is rise, fall, dualities, everything comes in. So the avatar, and that's how Shri Krishna says, I am the anirdeshyam. You can't measure me. You can't find any direction to me. I am beyond. And yet I have taken birth and become this creation. Human ignorant, laboring human grown midst the twixt the gates of death and birth. So the whole idea of avatar in the Gita is not just a magical thing that God became human and therefore he is leading us all. That's one part. But it reveals the secret that God has become all this creation, not just human. And Sri Aurobindo says that in one sense, the psychic being does for an individual the same work that an avatar does for an age. So all our psychic beings have come from there, and it's like a mini descent. So the divine has become all this. And in the larger sense, he has become this creation, but from time to time he takes a human body. So if the divine, who is beyond the transcendent, can take a human birth, so what is so impossible that creation has emerged out of him? So all these are these subtle points which Sri Aurobindo brings out, which in the traditional commentaries are missed, because obviously Gita is 700 slokes packed, but it has many shades. Every sloka becomes a point of meditation and entry into beautiful mysteries. So the Vibhuti Yoga is that before we meet, he is preparing us for the grand disclosure so that we are ready, and then God has time. Beyond it, he will not touch. He will take us to God as time. He is manifested as the spirit of time. And beyond it is like Arjun himself says, I cannot. It is beyond me now. So he says, come back to your, you know, more manageable form as Vishnu. Don't show me this form. I am terrified. So see, it's so interesting that God releases us from all fear. He is called as Bhai Bhanjana. But the vision of God can be terrifying to the unprepared human consciousness. Because all our petty things to which we hold on to as so dear, so cherishing, Arjun sees is devouring all of them. The ego is very scared, and that's the problem of surrender. Often people say, you know, they find it very difficult to surrender. So they feel it's a sign of superiority that I don't surrender. So sometime when I have discussion, I say, you know what, you are basically very scared. Scared of what? You are scared of losing your ego. You think that's your ultimate security, possession. You want to keep your identity in your pocket as Mr. So-and-so. Fair enough, but you are basically afraid. If you were courageous, you will surrender. If you are logical, you would surrender. If you are wise, you will surrender. If you have common sense, you will surrender. But if you are afraid, you cannot surrender. So this is the... So he is preparing us for that. But first, step by step. So the supreme word of the Gita, page 337, we have now got to the inmost kernel of the Gita's yoga. The supreme word is Shri Krishna start. The chapter begins, Paramam Vacha. I am telling you now the supreme word. And he tells Arjun, why I am telling you? Because you take joy in me. So all the secrets of the divine can only be revealed, not meditation and all these, but when you love God. And to love God has nothing to do with aarti, all this. It has to do with taking joy in God. When you take joy in God, God takes joy in you. That's how Sri Aurobindo describes in the synthesis of yoga. That, you know, the God also takes joy in his devotee. And then he says, there is so much more that the human tongue cannot utter when he talks about bhakti and love for the divine. He says, because if you ask divine, whom do you love? He'll say, my lovers. I love them. And he says, and nothing is impossible to the God lover, because he is the very self of the beloved. Imagine, you ask him that, where is yourself? Our self is you. He'll say, myself is all those who love me. So this is the beginning. The whole living and breathing center of its teaching. So without this, all these writings on Gita and, you know, success in job because of the Gita, Gita for a quick way to, you know, up the ladder, all this has no meaning unless we have the kernel. We can see now quite clearly that the ascent of the limited human soul, when it withdraws from the ego and the lower nature into the immutable self, calm, silent and stable, was only a first step, an initial change. This is what we have been reading through the chapters. And now too we can see why the Gita from the first insisted on the Ishvara. And now see what he is saying. The Godhead in the human form. So the Godhead is there beyond. He is formless. He is everything. But when he takes a human form, it is so much easier. So when you contemplate, that's why when we see Shobindo wrote about the mother, the one whom we adore as the mother is the consciousness force of the Supreme. So people asked him, so you mean, smart people, intelligent people, they asked him, so you mean we have to surrender to that mother which is consciousness force of the Supreme and not to this mother? He says, beware of a adverse Asuric hostile Maya creating a difference between this mother and her. Because again, you know, ego. She is like me, another human. How can I surrender? But formless someone somewhere, that's easy to surrender. It's an excuse not to surrender actually. So he says that Ishvara, the Godhead in the human form, who speaks always of himself, Aham, Mam. So in the Gita, Sri Krishna is the Supreme who is speaking. So he'll use these words. And Sri Aurobindo, you know, describes that. And he says it was, the Gita was given in a super conscient state. In that state, Sri Krishna has revealed the greatest mysteries. As of some great secret and omnipresent being, Lord of all the worlds and master of the human soul, one who is greater even than the immutable self-existence, which is still and unmoved forever and abides forever untouched by the subjective and objective appearances of the natural universe. You see, this is how, I think long back I have here also shared this line from a bhajan. So I'll translate in English, but first in Hindi. So the poet says that, I think it is Narasimha Mehta, but I may be mistaken. He says, Dekhi sakhi mohe acharaj aave. I am surprised. Oh, my friend, I am very surprised looking at this mystery. What is the mystery? Brahma anadi anant agochar. So nandlal ko lal kahave. So he says, Brahman, anadi, beginningless, anant, infinite, agochar, cannot be comprehended by any sense. And we are calling him that he is the baby of Nand. He says, I can't understand. He says, Jake bhai dolat nabdharani, kal karal jasu gati pave, with whose fear all the stars are there moving in space. And he is taking the finger of Yashoda Ma and telling her, teach me how to walk. This mystery of God's birth, Godhead in a human form. And actually this is the greatest grace for mankind, if at all, you know. So he says, all yoga is a seeking after the divine, a turn towards union with the eternal. This is what yoga is, nothing less. So yoga is not a set of exercises, yoga is not a technique, a method, whatever it be. Method, techniques are all at the service of something. If we can reach that through any technique, it's good. And if we cannot, then it has to be left aside. At best, it is a stepping stone. So all yoga is a seeking after the divine, a turn towards union with the eternal. According to the adequacy of our perception of the divine and the eternal will be the way of the seeking, the depth and fullness of the union and the integrality of the realization. So basically he is making it very clear that you must be clear when you say, I am seeking the divine. What do you mean by the word divine? And in synthesis he explains it very beautifully, integral conception of the divine. So in the Gita also there is the conception. He is not saying as a conception, he is simply saying, I am this. But human mind, when it says there is only one God, but you see what we have done. We have made a God of justice who will punish you, who will roast you, who will eat you without a banana leaf. So what conceptions of God? Who will cast you into hell? And God is one. No, that's not a God whom human beings can worship. You can be terrified of that God. So even God has been turned into a terrorist. So you see, so that's why it's important that based on our conception of the divine, based on what we conceive as the divine, so will the revelation come. So this has another very interesting sloka. Yo yatha maam prapadyante. So as men approach me in faith, so I reveal myself to them. So this is how it he begins. For a beginner, it's fine. He seeks for some conception. So man is a mental being, so he approaches the infinite through his finite mind. That's the basic thing. He seeks for some conception on which his mind is able to seize, select some power of his nature, which by force of an absolute self-heightening can reach out and lay its touch on the infinite truth that in itself is beyond his mental comprehension. Some face of that infinite truth, for because it is infinite, it has numberless faces, words of its meaning, self-suggestion. So basically, divine is beyond, but we cannot simply, so we start with some conception, some idea, some name, some form, some power, some aspect, and it is fine, because to begin with, you are admitted into the glories of the eternal. However narrow the gate may be, he is satisfied if it offers some prospect into the wideness which attracts him. You see, this is what is described in Savitri, which Shipra was, no, you can sleep. She was talking about Ganesha ji, that there is some little thing through which, you know, it reminded that in Savitri, she has carved an image, or Satyavan has carved an image and bouquet, and she prays, and what she prayed, only Durga knew. Now you see, this is the beauty. It doesn't matter. That will become for you the doorway to the eternal. I remember as a child, there was a plastic small little baby Krishna in my house. And I was so attached, I would love, cling to it like some psychiatrist would have labeled transient object attachment, transitional. I couldn't sleep without this Krishna till 10 years, and people said he is going crazy and I have to keep the Krishna by the side. And the Krishna, poor Krishna plastic, started developing some dents here and there, but I just won't change. I said, this is my Krishna. So wherever I'll go, I'll carry him. And I didn't used to do any puja or anything, but this was my Krishna. Parents thought that probably, you know, he is actually going crazy. So one day when I was sleeping, they did a little surgery, picked him up, and they told the servant boy that please dispose this Krishna into the pond nearby, because they saw all this pockmarks were developing on my Krishna. So I didn't realize, and Krishna was gone. When I got up, I howled, I cried for 3 hours. And my dad said, I'm going to get you much better. I waited for the shop to open, got me a better, similar Krishna of rubber, nice, this thing. I said, I can't connect. For quite some time. Now, you see, this is not about that little. It was a thing I learned unconsciously. It's not about it's a plastic image or a small little Krishna. It connects you to each one. It's a doorway. I didn't even know what, you know, Krishna is, because everybody in the house prayed to Rama. But that Krishna, I still remember with fondness, whatever I may go, wherever, anywhere. But that Krishna was Krishna. My Krishna. So you see, any narrow, any gate, it becomes for you. Sometimes it can be just a little picture. I told you, no, in Iran they had thrown away my friend's, he's in Oroville now, but anyways, so they threw away his Gita and everything on the airport, and they checked and saw Gita and threw it away, burnt it away. So suddenly they found also a picture of Shiva Parvati with Ganesh and Kartikeya. So they asked, who are they? And he had a presence of mind. He said, parents. So now that is something you, they were caught in a fix. So they looked at him and quizzically said, strange parents. Naturally with a but India is a land of snake charmers, no? So everything is possible. So finally they said, okay, carry on. Because they thought actually it is the parents' picture. So you see, but that becomes the connect. So any gate, however narrow, that's why we should not disturb that. If it sets him to the way, to the fathomless profundity and unreachable heights of that which calls to his spirit, and as he approaches it, so it receives him. Ye yatha maam prapadyante. You think this little idol, I'll pray, I'll get a response. You will get a response. Whether somebody else will get a response is not the issue. Because to each his own idol. You know the famous story of Tulsidas when he goes to Jagannath Puri temple. And they told him, no, it is same, Rama. Rama avatar, another avatar. So he goes there. But when he sees Krishna without, you know, hands and all this, and he is sleepless at night. He even says that, I can't worship you. You are without hands, without feet. My Rama, he is, you know, with Dhanush Baan, how can I worship you? Then at night Krishna appears. He is not eaten anything. Then he comes and he tells him, you know what? Without hands, have you not, don't you remember? Without hands, I take care of millions. Without feet, I reach everywhere. He says, oh, then next day he understands his mistake. That without hands, without feet. So you see, that's how when you look at Jagannath, he's just a small little, his face basically. So without hands, see, they are such beautiful symbols. So leaving apart the story behind. So as men approach, so he receives them. And then he says that, well, philosophical mind finds it very difficult to conceive of the divine. So it says, neti neti. Not this, not this. Neti neti jako shruti gave. The problem with neti neti is that in the end, if you follow it sincerely, you will end up discarding the entire creation. And there will be no connecting point. And at some point, all images and forms and aspects of the divine. Because everything you have to discard, if you have to go to the, see, this is the how Buddhist goes. So the main difference between Mahayana and Hinayana, that Mahayana accepts everything, but Hinayana says no, not even an image. So at the end you will discard everything, so there will be complete disconnection with, even at the end, you yourself, who is aspiring, who is questionable. Because you are also part of that neti neti. You also don't exist. So this is the problem with neti neti. So this is what he describes in the next passage. So the last line here in on page 338, this passage. In the end, knowledge itself is negated and abolished in the identical and unknowable. By the way of an increasing quietude, ending in an absolute passivity, the Maya created soul, or the bundle of associations is what Buddhism would say, not what Buddha would say, but what Buddhism would say, that there is no soul, it's just a bundle of associations, sanskaras. And it is that which is reborn, which picks up again, and it's a whole story altogether. But he says that whether you call it a Maya created soul, it amounts to the same thing, that individual soul itself is a figment of Maya, or you call it the bundle of associations, we call ourselves, enters into annihilation of its idea of personality, makes an end of the lie of living, disappears into nirvana. But as we see, this difficult abstractive method of self-negation, however it may draw to it some exceptional natures, cannot satisfy universally the embodied soul out in man. And that's naturally because soul is, there are many sides of our seeking. We don't just want somebody sitting there watching with whom I cannot connect. We don't just want eternal passivity, Shiva with his eyes closed in trance. We want to see Shiva dancing. We want to see Shiva benevolently blessing us, giving a boon. So all these aspects of the divine, we also want God in the battlefield. We want God the lover, the playmate, the friend. how all these aspects can be satisfied if we just speak of divine as. So because of that we see that page 339, from this need arise the religions of love and works, whose strength is that they satisfy and lead Godwards, the most active and developed powers of our humanity. Often people ask this question, even recently somebody was asking that, you know, why it's so, Sri Aurobindo, you have to be very intellectual to read and it's very difficult. I said, actually, you have to go to Odisha to see. That's not true. I said, you have made a very intellectualized, hyper-intellectualized Sri Aurobindo. Because you don't know the magic and mystery of love. And constantly the mother and Sri Aurobindo speak about that. What does Sri Aurobindo say? Love the mother, know that she loves you. And because we have, I sometimes feel we have almost deliberately put that aside. And that has created so much difficulty everywhere in the world. Because Sri Aurobindo, supermind, there will be a lecture on that with slideshow presentation. So people are lost between supermind and overmind. As Amal Kiran used to draw pictures, no portraits, when people used to meditate. Mother is sitting there, people on the left and right, and Amal Kiran would keep looking at people and drawing sketches. Sometimes he would put some comments. So people asked him, why are you not meditating? He says, what do you mean? You want to close your eyes when the divine is right in front of me? Why should I close my eyes? So beautiful. And then in one of them, he sees Puraniji, wrestler with a small neck. He is lolling like this and he says, undermined by the supermind. People spend so much time in, you know, trying to analyze. Even somebody analyzing, I saw a question somebody is asking, did Sri Aurobindo actually achieve the supermind? I said, are you living in even mind? We can talk about supermind. But when you love the mother, everything she reveals. That's the secret. So he's saying that's why even Buddhism, he gives this example, even Buddhism with its austere and uncompromising negation, both of subjective self and objective things, had still to found itself initially on a divine discipline of works and to admit as a substitute for bhakti the spiritualized emotionalism of a universal love and compassion. Sikhism, you see, same thing. God is, you know, all the descriptions, you know, ek, omkar, nirakar, all this is there. But if you ask them, what is the practice? So they have two things in practice. This is, one is Vandachak and Kiratkar. So he says that you remember him, take joy in remembering him and share everything with him, do the seva, finished. Because this is such a direct connect, do seva and share everything that you have with everyone. And the second is that remember him. Kiratkar, as much as you can, you know, you remember him in action and everything. Now that is something you can connect. But the moment you talk about, so he says there is a necessity, but he goes further. This is only the beginning. So he says, however, but the weakness of the next para, but the weakness of the kinetic and the emotional religions is that they are too much absorbed in some divine personality and in the divine values of the finite. So we have sects and cults which come up. That only my God, only this form if you do, then you can find. Otherwise some other form, then you cannot. So this is one of the problems. She is building up the tempo. What Krishna is going to reveal, who he is. So these religions fall short of a complete absorption in the eternal and the perfect union by identity. And yet to that identity in some other way, if not in the abstractive, since their all oneness has its basis, the spirit that is in man must one day arrive. So he is first showing the weakness of both these. One is the emotional religions, that they tend to attach to one particular personality, one particular form. So this is one part. The other, on the other hand, the weakness of a contemplative, quietistic spirituality is that it arrives at this result by a too absolute abstraction, and in the end it turns into a nothing or a fiction, the human soul, whose aspiration was yet all the time the whole sense of this attempt at union. For without the soul and its aspiration, liberation and union could have no meaning. So that's where the Buddhism, the catch of Buddhism and even of Advaita Vedanta of a certain type, that who is the one who is aspiring and who is getting liberated? Of course, we can say, like with Ashtavakra. Ashtavakra says in his Ashtavakra Gita, he says, at the end there is none bound, none free, none seeking to be free. Now, this is a very profound truth, but at the same time, apply it in... It's a concession to everything. It's a profound truth that the soul has chosen to be. It's not negating the soul, but that's how it is understood. So, now comes the greatness of the central thought, page 340. The greatness of the central thought of the Gita, in which all its threads are gathered up and united, consists in the synthetic value of a conception which recognizes the whole nature of the soul of man in the universe and validates by a large and wise unification its many-sided need of the supreme and infinite truth, power, love, being, to which our humanity turns in its search for perfection and immortality and some highest joy and power and peace. So this is the beauty that Gita's conception of the divine is very vast. So he is perfect peace and calm. He is also supreme rapture. He is the silence and he is also the word. He is he whom beyond comprehension, and he is the one whom all the philosophies are trying to define, yet none can. Each picks up an aspect. He is all the gods and goddesses, and yet he is beyond all the gods and goddesses. So it reconciles all these aspects and therefore opens a very large door. Samagramam, that is the term used. There is a strong and wide endeavor towards a comprehensive spiritual view of God and man and universal existence. Not indeed that everything without any exception is seized in these 18 chapters. So he says, okay, hold on. Don't say that, then it is synonymous with Sri Aurobindo. So he says something is there. He has left it. Sri Krishna basically knew that mankind is not ready, and there are 18 chapters. Arjuna is in a hurry. He has to fight a battle, and I can't be just giving him all the every possible truth. Maybe if I give too much of a truth, he will say, I'm going to Pondicherry. I'm not staying here. So he holds back. But at least three times, Sri Krishna knocks at the doors of the supermind. But he would not open it. So we'll see it as it comes. So he says everything is not there, but a lot is there which can help us. Still, so large a scheme is laid out that we have only to fill in, to develop, to modify, to stress, to follow our point, to follow out points, to work out, hint and illuminate adumbration in order to find a clue to any further claim of our intelligence and need of our spirit. So he starts by saying that yes, in the frame, he says there is place for the anirdeshyam, the avyaktam, aksharam, akshar brahma paramam, that's how the Gita puts it. All this is there, but it also goes to the other, purushottam. And now he comes to something very interesting on page 341. For his utmost self-existent way of being is indeed an unthinkable achintya-rupam. That's why Mother at one place says something very nice. He says, see, you speak about Sri Aurobindo and this is your way of speaking about Sri Aurobindo. It's very fine, very good, very clear. But if you think this is the only way, then there is a problem. No words can limit him. No words can define him. You may write 101 books and many more on Sri Aurobindo and the Mother, yet it will be, they cannot capture the entirety. That's why the Mother says, and this is what I wrote to my friend, or somebody who asked, that you know, Sri Aurobindo is very difficult to understand. I said, you must remember what Mother has said. Mother has said that Who can understand Sri Aurobindo? He is as vast as the universe and his teaching is infinite. This is very interesting. I said, teaching is infinite. I understand Sri Aurobindo is infinite. But he's saying Sri Aurobindo is vast as the universe. His teaching is infinite, but that's a different subject. The meaning got clear. So his teaching is infinite. The only way to understand him is to come a little close to him is through works, through service, and by loving him unconditionally. This is the way to understand Sri Aurobindo. Very interesting. You may read all the books, give all the talks, write things, know all the philosophies, compare, contrast, but you won't understand unless he makes us understand. And he will make us understand if there is the joy of God. Bhajanti mam. So this is what he is taking us to. So, Sri Krishna asks a question, Arjuna asks a question, that you know, all these Jnani Yogi talk about Anirdesham and Aksharam. So he says, yeah, this is correct, but I will tell you something still greater. And that's where he said, the method of negative passivity, quietude, renunciation of life and works by which men feel after this intangible absolute is admitted and ratified in the Gita's philosophy, but only with a minor permissive sanction, that it's okay, they want to go that way, it's fine. But what he is going to say is something very interesting. This negating knowledge approaches the eternal by one side only of the truth, and that side the most difficult to reach and follow for the embodied soul in nature, dukkham. So he says it's very difficult to reach that way. It proceeds by a highly specialized, even an unnecessarily arduous way, narrow and difficult to tread as a razor's edge. That's how one of the Upanishads, that hard is the path, narrow as the razor. Shurashya dhara nishitha durat pantha duratya nishitha kavyo vadanti. Shurashya dhara pantha duratya kavyo vadanti. They who have gone have said it's a razor's edge. There is a famous novel written by, I think, Nobel Prize winner. Anyways, on this, the razor's edge of human bondage, the same, pearl is probably. Anyways, so this also, one day there was a little discussion going on in one of the group. That's how the Upanishad says. Yes, I said yes. But the mother says, I'll carry you across the razor's edge. Are you ready to be in her lap? How can there be something other than the Upanishad? Sri Krishna himself is saying. Mother comes later. See what he is saying. He says, yes, there is a path like that. It's a minor permission. But not by denying all relations. But through all relations is the divine, infinite, naturally approachable to man and most easily, widely, intimately seizable. He says, those who want to do it, fine. But if you want an easier path, a simpler path, not by denying all relations with the divine, but all forming all kinds of relations with him. So few lines below he says, on the contrary, there are 1,000 relations by which the Supreme Eternal is secretly in contact and union with our human existence, and by all essential ways of a nature and of the world's nature, sarvabhavin. Don't we, when we say, you know, it's God's grace that I got this. So who is he? He's the giver. When we have a problem and it's relieved, who is he? He's the healer. So every which way you see, so divine is in contact with us in 1,000 ways. Therefore, is this other way natural and easy for man? Sukham aptam. So there is one razor's edge, dukham. It's a path which is full of, it's not easy. He says, okay, it's the same. Baby monkey and the baby cat attitude, which Sri Ramakrishna speaks of. So baby monkey has to hold by power of tapasya, and if he lets go, he breaks his bones. But baby cat is held. And Sri Aurobindo confirms it. Mother confirms it. Sri Ramakrishna, of course, has spoken about it. And now you see the Gita speaks of it. It doesn't use the word baby monkey, baby cat, but it is the same thing, that there is a path which is full of dukham, not easy, like the reader said, and the other is sukham, it's full of joy. The journey itself is happy. And that's how I look at it, that you want to climb Mount Everest, that there is Shiva sitting there, and you know, you are going by that faith and everything, fine. But imagine if Shiva says, come on, I'll take you to my abode. Life changes. Even Avalanche is nothing. If you go inside, you know, he's there with me. He knows all the paths. He'll pull me out. Even if I'm buried with him. So that's why it's called as Sukham. He uses the word Sukham. Aptam. God does not make himself difficult of approach to us. Only one thing is needed. One demand made on us. The single indomitable will to break through the veil of our ignorance. So basically, again and again, God does not want to make it very difficult. He loves us. Why would he want that you sit for 5 hours in a kind of concentrated? He says, whatever you are doing, just turn it towards me. Have that persistent will. Indomitable will to break through the veil of our ignorance, and the persistent seeking of the mind and heart and life for that which is all the time near to it, within it, its own soul of being and spiritual essence and the secret of its personality and its impersonality, itself and its nature. So in every which way, sarvabhavena bharata. This is our one difficulty. The rest, the master of our existence will himself see to and accomplish. Aham tvam mokshayishyami mahasucha. All that is required is a will, persistent will, through every which way, through heart and mind and will and service and every which way, whatever way, and turn towards him. So, then on page 342, he makes it clear that who is this Ishvara he is talking about. The Godhead is not the limited personal God of so many exoteric religions. All the gods are included in him, but you have to know the difference. For those are all only partial and outward formations of this other. See now that question that day about gods. Shri Krishna is also saying the same thing. So we can limit ourselves to the limited personalities, or we can find all of them in the one. This is exactly what Mother is saying. That if you want to follow the supramental path, and it's so logical. If you have a direct connection with the Prime Minister, I'm sorry, you know, I'm not. Would you really like to go through all the, you'll just tell him, bro, I wish, bro, here I am. He will order everybody, instruct. My brother is coming, let him in. That's how it should be. Why would you do it? You have to be foolish to do it. So that's what Mother is saying, that those who want to worship the gods of religions, they can continue to do so. She's not saying no. But they must know that it has nothing to do with the supramental yoga. So supramental yoga is now the yoga of the Gita extending further. So what does Sri Krishna say? He says the same thing, only because we have accepted now Gita fully inside. So we just read over it. And the Godhead is not the limited personal God of so many exoteric religions. For those are all only partial and outward formations of this other. This is the one supreme person, soul, being, Purusha, of whom all Godheads are aspects. All individual personality, a limited development in cosmic nature. This Godhead is not a particularized name and form of divinity, Ishta Devata. He says, you want to do it, you do it. But now Sri Krishna is disclosing who he is. Constructed by the intelligence or embodying the special aspiration of the worshipper. See, that's why, you see, he is preparing us for the grand disclosure when Sri Krishna reveals his Vishwaroop. All gods are in him. In Savitri, there is a line, all worship dies, look through his eyes. So, all such names and forms are only powers and faces of the one Deva, who is the universal Lord of all worshippers and all religions, but this is itself that universal deity, Deva Deva. This Ishvara is not a reflection of the impersonal and indeterminable Brahman in illusive Maya, For from beyond all cosmos as well as within it he rules and is the lord of the worlds and their creatures. Who is the lord of the worlds? Jagannath. He is that. You see, he is giving us a new vision of Jagannath without having going to Puri. He is Parabrahman, who is Parameshwara. These lines are magic actually. He is Parabrahman, who is Parameshwara, Supreme Lord, because he is the Supreme Self and Spirit. And from his highest original existence, he originates and governs the universe. Not self-deceived, but with an all-knowing omnipotence. Not is the working of his divine nature in the cosmos an illusion, whether of his or our consciousness. The only illusive Maya is the ignorance of the lower Prakriti. What a relief. This world is not left ungoverned to our karmas. Thank God. There will be no hope. who can claim my karma azara? There will be no hope. So luckily he is governing. This is the best news we have heard. Amidst all the wars going on. So we have people asking, you know, what is what will happen? This war, that war. Okay, but don't forget, the divine wisdom is looking into it. That's how mother said. When she was asked, mother, will there be a third world war this time? She said, the divine wisdom is looking into it. End of the story. Because this world is not a governance in absentio. Sri Krishna himself is saying, no. He is still the one who has shaped this world, is ever its Lord. Our errors are his steps upon the way. He works through the harsh vicissitudes of our lives. He works through the hard breath of battle and toil. He works through our sins, our sorrow and our tears. Whatever the appearance, we must bear. Kurukshetra is there, but at the end, it is the glory of the Lord. So, this is how it is. So, this too, he says, there is a supreme, a divine nature, which is the true creatrix of the universe. And the last line in this passage, he is the Godhead in man. The Jiva is spirit of his spirit. He is the Godhead in the universe. This world in space and time is his phenomenal self-extension. Now you see, where Sri Aurobindo reveals this truth? In the secret knowledge. The master of existence lurks in us and plays at hide and seek with his own force. The absolute, the perfect, the alone has called out of his force. He brings out. And he becomes space and time and all that it contains within. He is the next passage. He is the Godhead in man who originates and directs all his workings. Therefore, man has to awake to the Godhead within himself. This is our task. To know the divinity he houses. To rise out of all that veils and obscures it. And to become united with this inmost self of his self, this greater consciousness of his consciousness, this hidden master of all his will and works, this being within him who is the fount and object of all his various becoming. See the prayer of the mother, thou who art the life of my life, the light of my intelligence. So we have to go to that of which we are a portion. And that connection is always there from his side. We have to make it from our side. He is the Godhead whose divine nature, origin of all that we are, is thickly veiled by these lower natural derivations. Next line. This Godhead is one in all things that are, the self who lives in all and the self in whom all live and move. Therefore, man has to discover his spiritual unity with all creatures. This is the secret of unity actually. To see all in the self and the self in all beings. Even to see all things and creatures as himself. So this is the path he is showing. This Godhead is the origin of all that is here or elsewhere. And by his nature he has become all these innumerable existences. Vasudevam Sarvamiti. So basically we have to reach that point where if somebody asks, who are your parents? Mother and Sri Aurobindo. Finished matter. chapter closed. No, still, where do you belong to, Mother and Sri Aurobindo? Which place? Why? They are everywhere. How beautiful if this can really become our, not just an instinct, but ingrained in our, how beautiful, you know, that's why but people live so much in provincial spirit, this place, that, they have, you know, what shall I say, this province, this language, that. A few lines below. A passive, relationless identity excludes love and action. But this larger and richer oneness fulfills itself by works. By pure emotion, it becomes the source and continent and substance and motive and divine purpose of all our acts and feelings. So work and feelings have their origin here. Kasmay devaya avisha videham. To what Godhead shall we give all our life and activities as an offering? See, Mother says when death is describing to her in Savitri that, you know, God is this, God is that, He is above all this creation. What are you talking about love? Love has no place there to stand. So don't talk all this. Then she says, you don't know the God I have nurtured in my heart. My God is love. My God is will and He triumphs over all. My God is love and He sweetly suffers all. He says, if when I go in hell, He is the one who will carry me in His arms. That's how she describes. And heaven, brilliant light, you say, I cannot face. I'll face it because He is with me, the charioteer, the swift. This is the Godhead of Savitri. So, what Shri Krishna is describing, this is the Godhead. This is the Lord who claims our sacrifice. A passive, relationless identity excludes the joy of adoration and devotion. But bhakti is the very soul and heart and summit. Soul and heart. Heart is the core, dynamism and summit. Crown and summit of this richer, completer, more intimate union. This Godhead is the fulfillment of all relations. It's so beautiful. This Godhead is the fulfillment of all relations. Father, mother, lover, friend and refuge of the soul of every creature. Who made Him just a Guruji sitting on a dais, giving His jnana? And oh, ye disciples, sit below and just... He's a friend. The clasp of the friend and the lover, the playmate. Father, mother, He's the one supreme and universal Deva, Atman, Purusha, Brahman, Ishvara of the secret wisdom. He has manifested the world in Himself in all these ways by His divine yoga. Its multitudinous existences are one in Him and He is one in them in many aspects. To awaken to the revelation of Him in all these ways together is man's side of the same divine yoga. Again he is saying divine does the yoga. All this is His manifestation. And once we become aware of this from our side, then the couplet is fully joined. So we have to become instrument of the divine manifestation, because all creation is a manifestation of the divine by His Aishwaryam. And one more line we'll read, then we'll stop. To make it perfectly and indisputably clear that this is the supreme and entire truth of His teaching, this the integral knowledge which He had promised to reveal, the divine avatar declares in a brief reiteration of the upshot of all that He has been saying, that this and no other is His supreme word, paramam vachah. Again hearken to my supreme word, bhuya eva shanu me paramam vachah. He's saying, listen, O Arjun, I am now telling you the supreme word. This supreme word of the Gita is, we find first the explicit and unmistakable declaration that the highest worship and highest knowledge of the eternal are the knowledge and the adoration of him as the supreme and divine origin of all that is in existence and the mighty lord of the world and its peoples, of whose being all things are the becomings. It is secondly the declaration of a unified knowledge and bhakti as the supreme yoga. That is the destined and the natural way given to man to arrive at union with the eternal Godhead. And to make more significant this definition of the way, to give an illuminating point to this highest importance of bhakti, founded upon and opening to knowledge and made the basis and motive power for divinely appointed works, the acceptance of it by the heart and mind of the disciple is put as a condition for the further development by which the final command to action comes at last to be given to the human instrument. Arjun, I will speak this supreme word to thee, says the Godhead, from my will for thy soul's good, now that thy heart is taking delight in me. So to understand Sri Aurobindo, we must take joy in Sri Aurobindo. It's not the mind that can do that. Is taking delight in me. Te priyamanya vakshami, for this delight of the heart in God is the whole constituent and a sense of true bhakti. So bhakti is the delight of the heart in God. Bhajanti priti purvakam Sri Aurobindo nami anando. Sri Aurobindo nami anando. Sri Aurobindo, Nami Anando, Mama.